So I'm happy that Randy Boysland joined us today for this actually very special podcast of East Meets West, the Spotlight Series. Who is Randy? I mean, in my own words, Randy has an amazing energy, and it's kind of like endless energy of him fighting for equality, not only in Canada, where he actually lives, actually around all of the world. He is a former politician, so he was the member of the parliament for the Advanced Centers. He was the special advisor to the prime minister on LGBTIQ issues, and he was, or you, Randy, were one of the five outed LGBTI members of parliament. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Welcome on the spotlight.
Well, look, it's a great pleasure to be here on the spotlight, Pavel, and it's an honor to be able to reach out to all of the people fighting for LGBTIQ plus equality in Europe and around the world. So I'm happy to answer your questions and to shed some light on what I've been working on and what some organizations that I'm connected to, what we've been working on.
Excellent. But maybe to start with, I outlined a little bit of your background. Was this really complete, or how would you describe yourself and your background?
Sure. Look, I'm happy to share a little bit of background. I was the Member of Parliament for Edmonton Centre from 2015 to 2019. And as you mentioned, I served as Prime Minister Trudeau's special advisor on LGBTQ2 issues. I also had the chance to be Parliamentary Secretary to our Minister of Canadian Heritage. And so that's everything to do with the arts, with the broadcasting set in Canada, but also official languages. And so I'm a Francophone from Alberta. I speak fluent French, and thanks to my time at Oxford, where I studied philosophy, politics, and economics, picked up a love of Spanish and enough German to be dangerous. But Spanish is where my focus is now, and I still have a professor that I spend an hour with every day, every week from Buenos Aires. And now I run a consulting firm that does a lot of work helping businesses and organizations grow. And I'm just really enjoying my time here in Canada with my partner, David, and my family. So there's life after politics, and I get to do fun events like this.
Excellent. But there's one thing, actually, what we believe that makes you quite busy at the moment. And that's your still work related to politics on a global level. Can you tell us a bit more about this?
Sure. One of the things that happened when I was a parliamentarian before Prime Minister Trudeau asked me to serve as a special advisor, I had already become part of an interparliamentary network known as Parlamericas. So if you can imagine all of the parliaments from Canada to Argentina, plus the Caribbean, on a regular basis, representatives from those parliaments would meet to advance certain issues in the region. And what was interesting for me is I was always looking for who were the other LGBTI parliamentarians. And I could find allies, but it was very rare for me to find other LGBTI people involved in that network. And so I started asking questions about the Interparliamentary Union, about the OSCE and other groups. And I realized that we didn't have a forum and we didn't even have a way to get together. And so I approached Nick Herbert, who was then a former cabinet minister for David Cameron in the UK. And I said, because his track record creating the Global Tuberculosis Caucus was so successful, would we consider creating a similar caucus for LGBTI parliamentarians and our allies at the national level, at the state or provincial level, and at the sort of the level of mayors and councillors? He loved the idea. We started working on it. And about a year later, we were able to launch the Global Equality Caucus at New York at the World Pride. I wasn't there because it was election year, so I had to be working in my riding. But I can tell when we had the Equal Rights Coalition Summit in Vancouver in August of 2018, we did convene a meeting with parliamentarians, with civil society, and with representatives of the United Nations, including Victor Madrigal-Borlos, the SOGI expert. And there was overwhelming enthusiasm for this idea. And so now we've been operating almost for 2 years. And as you can imagine, the global pandemic has really slowed things down, including delaying the meeting of the Equal Rights Coalition Summit that was supposed to be in May in London. And so we've been busy. Do you want to know more?
Oh, yes. So tell us definitely more, because what is actually behind the Global Equality Caucus? So
sure,
what is the aim? Why do you exist?
Look, we exist because LGBTI legislators exist and because LGBTI issues that are facing people around the world need to be raised. And we're not where we need to be. I mean, we have 70 countries that still criminalize same-sex relationships. We have, look, it's 5 or 7 countries, depending on how you slice it, that will kill me for being there. And that wouldn't let my partner and I travel to their shores together. And so we have to, and we decided to focus on 5 key areas. And again, who are members? LGBTI legislators and our allies. So in those parts of the world where we don't yet have LGBTQ2 people elected, we want to work with our allies, because there was a time in Canada where we had no LGBTQ2 people elected. It was our straight allies who were pushing. And in the case of Canada, the courts did lead Parliament quite a bit. But then finally, parliamentarians got on with the program and really started pushing to enable enough space for LGBTQ people like me to be elected. And so our strategy and our mission, if you will, our 5 priorities are to support decriminalization and the end of violence against LGBTQ plus people, to support equal rights and non-discrimination for LGBTQ plus people, to ensure that we have access, equal access to healthcare, including HIV treatment and support for trans people, ensure that data is collected so that governments can be accountable for how they're providing support to LGBTQ people. Because, you know, Pavel, if the data doesn't exist, then the parliamentarians can't go to the bureaucrats to say the programming needs to happen. Right? It's literally pushing against this idea that in Chechnya, there are no LGBT people. In Iran or in Russia, there are no LGBTI people. And so the data is really important. And we want to support and urge funding for non-governmental organizations, CSOs, civil society organizations working with LGBTQ plus people, and legislators, parliamentarians, congress people, asambleístas, as they say in Spanish, or congresistas, have access to those funds. And we want those parliamentarians to dislodge that funding and make sure that organizations can actually work on the ground. And then the links to business are really important, because, Pablo, we're going to need to have the support as this international NGO. We're going to need to have funding. And so we did manage to have a partnership with Google, which I'm happy to tell you more about.
Whoa. But tell me, for 2019, you said that actually the group was established, I think June, if I remember well.
Yes.
So is there already any progress, any signs of actually making things better in some parts of the world?
Yes. And what was able to happen while people were still able to travel is that Nick Herbert, our chair, was able to attend meetings around the world to advance the cause of LGBTI rights and to shine a light on what individuals were doing in the world. And it's amazing when you think of when COVID started here in Canada. We really went into lockdown as of about March 12th. But at the beginning of February, I traveled from Edmonton to Ottawa to meet with Nick Herbert, Alan Wardell, Boris Dietrich from the Netherlands. And we had a series of meetings with Canadian officials, including ministers, including parliamentary secretaries, including members of the Senate, members of the House, officials, in advance of what we assumed was going to be the Equal Rights Coalition meeting in London in May. And then the world changed. But we were able to get a commitment from Canadian parliamentarians in that case to form their own sort of national committee. And that is being led by Senator Renee Cormier here in Canada. And then everything stopped. And so we decided that we had to do something to sort of fill the gap between when the Equal Rights Coalition conference was to take place and we would all see each other in person. And now we don't have it in, we didn't have it in May of 2020. We didn't have it in November of 2020. And now it's an open question as whether it will be in May of 2021 or all the way to November. And so what could we possibly do to fill the gap was the question.
So perhaps are you doing any digital events or anything online to actually bring people?
Well, you put your finger on it. So we threw this idea around. We talked with people like Jessica Stern at Outright Action International and Kamali Powell at Rainbow Railroad and Helen Kennedy at EGAL and people at the Commonwealth Equality Network. And we said, look, what can we do? How can we do this? And then Nick and I and our team started talking and said, well, look, let's use the power of convening. Let's bring people around the table. Now, to do something where we would have digital events in different parts of the world would require a team and some staff and some funding. And so we approached Google with a plan and we said, we want to have 6 digital events, 1 in each section of the world, roughly spaced out 2 to 3 weeks between each other. And we want to convene legislators and civil society to say what's happening on 2 or 3 key themes in the region. And what are legislators and civil society doing to address this issue? Well, here's what happened. Google accepted and we got busy. And so the series is called Legislators for LGBT plus Equality. And we've had our first event in Oceania, and the recording of that is being worked on. I am working with my team here in Canada and colleague legislators in Central and South America to have an event that will take place in early December in across the region. And so that will be an event that will be able to be accessed in English, in Spanish, and in Portuguese. And so we're very excited about that. And then in the new year, we'll be looking at programming for Europe, for North America and the Caribbean, for Africa, and for Asia. And so you can imagine the logistics that go into making sure we have the right themes for the region, that we have a moderator that's a legislator, that we have more legislators from different parts of the region that can participate, and we have civil society and Pavel, we're doing it all online. We're doing it all using using Google Meets, and it's all going to be broadcast through YouTube Live. And so it's been a fascinating journey, and we're very excited about some of the voices that we're going to be able to hear from. But as you can imagine, what's happening right now in countries around the world is those regimes that are not LGBTQ2 friendly and those autocratic regimes are using the excuse of COVID to crack down on our people even more. And so we need to shine a light on that. We need to have a digital record of that. And we need to let people know that legislators are watching and that we're not going to stand for it. And then we need to bring all of those voices to the Equal Rights Coalition Summit, whenever it takes place in London in 2021.
This sounds amazing. Let's stay maybe a little bit with this digital event. So you said that there will be one specific for Europe, which will be coming up
in the new year. And so, look, our team will be fanning out. We are working very hard. I don't want to tip the hands too much, but a very nice approach has been made to Commissioner Helena Dalli at the EU, and also to Boris Dietrich. So they are great friends of the network. So stay tuned for more on that. But we're looking for legislators to help us promote the event, to participate. And Alan and the team out of the United Kingdom are working hard on that European event. My team here in Canada will be responsible for building the North America and the Caribbean event. So you can imagine that's all of the Caribbean nations, Mexico, the United States, and Canada. And with the election in the United States, and once the inauguration of the president-elect is over and the new administration is in place, we should be able to have access to quite a few interesting figures and new figures that we haven't seen in a U.S. administration before, able to talk about and lean in on the work that we need done for LGBTQ2 people in North America and the Caribbean, but also around the world.
So once again, who can be part of the event?
Well, look, what we're doing is we're working very carefully to curate the event. And I mean, let's map out one of the events. Okay, I'll give you an example. Central and South America, we've got maybe 90 minutes. Okay, so we're working to have broadcasts from at least one current and one former head of state. So I'll leave it at that. So that would be 3 to 5 minutes each right there. And then we want a message from somebody that everybody in the region is going to recognize, another 5 minutes. And then we go to a live panel of about 20 minutes, and I get 5 people on that, okay? So I get one legislator to be the moderator, I get 2 more legislators, and I get 2 civil society. That's 5 people from the region. We will have 2 one-minute videos, like pre-recorded videos, asked to the panel so that they can respond to something. And then we have an interview, and it's an interview about the role of the court, so I'm just going to leave it there. Then we have another panel of 20 minutes, another 5 to 7 people involved. So imagine in a region where we have over 25 countries, we really have probably enough space for about 25 to maybe 25, if we're lucky, people. And so we're asking people to take a role to promote this in the region. Once we have the official date, we'll share it with you, we'll share it with them. And right now, I know that Alan and his team are looking for and reaching out to legislators in the region. And so if people are interested, we do invite them to get in contact with us at equalitycaucus.org. And we can make sure that we put the right email as well. You can even, if you want to spell it and put it in the event, you can do randy.boissonneau@equalitycaucus.org, and we'll share that with you at the end. And then I'll share that with Alan and the European team. But what we do want is we want people to promote the event. We want people to attend live. And then the recordings will be something that we can keep in the archive that people can watch. Look, if it doesn't work for them in the time zone, then you watch it when you can, you know, when after you've woken up the next day, you can watch the recording and see what happened. But this will be a digital record that will be very important for our work to then create regional caucuses. So imagine a European caucus of the Global Equality Caucus. Imagine that each country in the region would have its own national caucus of global equality, where we'd have our LGBTI elected officials and our allies, or in some cases, just allies. And look, if there's a community, if there's a caucus in one of your countries that's only three legislators, well, that's more than we had before this was started. And in the case of the Global Tuberculosis Caucus, Nick and his team over the last 7 years has assembled 2,000 legislators to be part of the Global Tuberculosis Caucus to make sure that the money that goes from governments actually gets to the people on the ground who need it. And they've been so successful with staff in seven countries that they had a full day dedicated to them at the United Nations in the fall of 2019. So let's dream and let's imagine when someday in the future we can have our own LGBTI forum at the United Nations.
I just wanted to actually talk about this, right? So this would be fantastic, right? To have the one day dedicated at the United Nations. So well, fingers crossed on this.
Fingers crossed. Look, you've had Fabrice Houdard here before. We know about the Free and Equal campaign at the United Nations. We know the work that Victor Madrigal-Borlos is doing, but we also know the significant pushback. We know the games that other countries play at Geneva, at the Human Rights Commission, about language. We know that there are countries in the world that say that LGBTQ rights, identity, gender is a Western thing. And there's a battle going on. There's a battle for hearts and minds. But we have to get back to a basic principle of do no harm. Like, let's not exercise violence against each other. We're all human beings. We all have fundamental rights in the United Nations Declaration on Human Rights. And we have to treat people as people first. And then we can diverge with opinions. But there should be no harm that comes to people simply because of who they love or how they identify.
Excellent. So once again, fingers crossed for all of the events and for the roadmap to the United Nations. And maybe it will not be one day. Maybe it will be the full week, which would be quite fantastic, right?
I would be happy to be there. And this is why the Equal Rights Coalition, and I have to thank the Dutch and I have to thank the Uruguayans, and then I have to thank Chile and the Canadian government for taking over after them. And Argentina and the United Kingdom deserve our thanks for holding this during a global pandemic and for doing their best with the summit that will be coming up. Because without the Equal Rights Coalition, we wouldn't have governments that are able to work with governments who are, you know, who don't have a perfect record on these issues, but who are trying and who are trying to make changes. And when you have, you know, 40 plus countries in the world saying we have to end discrimination against LGBTQ plus people, that's really powerful. And so we need to look, none of these organizations are perfect, but it's better than the alternative, which is to have nobody talking about these issues and to have, you know, our rights actually go backwards as opposed to going forward.
Excellent. Now, tell me something, because you live in Canada, and Canada we did not really yet talked about. So what is actually the current situation? Is everything super fine? Is everything perfect when it comes to LGBTI inclusion and diversity?
I wish I could say it is, but it's not. And look, when I did my role as special advisor to the Prime Minister, people would ask me at the beginning, well, look, is this role necessary? Why do we need to do this? We had a lot of work to do. We had to apologize to LGBTQ2 Canadians who were persecuted by the government over 50 years. There was a policy of the Canadian federal government to make sure that no LGBTQ people would be in the federal public service, in the army, or in the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And so people's lives were ruined. When they found out they were gay or lesbian, they persecuted them, they interrogated them, they threatened them with firing or with outing them with their family. It was a horrible chapter in Canadian history that lasted all the way into the mid-90s. And so the Prime Minister apologized to Canadians in November of 2017. And my team and I helped with a national advisory committee on that. We helped with crafting the language. We settled the world's largest class action lawsuit, $145 million Canadian, including $15 million for a memorial fund, which will include a monument on Parliament Hill to this very dark chapter in Canadian history, so that never again does the Canadian government turn its backs on or persecute LGBTQ people in Canada. And I can tell you that we did make great strides. We put protections in for trans people in our legislation, in our hate legislation, and in the Canadian human rights legislation. And we did reduce the blood ban. There's a blood ban in Canada for men who have sex with men. It was a full-time, lifetime ban. We got that from 5 years down to 1 year, and now from 1 year to 3 months. There's still more work to do on that. I can tell you that there were great accomplishments with a $20 million fund domestically that I was able to chip loose in the 2019 budget for Canadian LGBTI organizations. And then internationally, we created the Canada Fund, $30 million over 5 years. and $10 million a year after that ongoing, so that Canadian LGBTQ2 organizations can do work overseas, and also that we can be funding as a government those organizations regionally that are doing work on the ground to improve LGBTQ2 lives. So that was a big change for Canada. We're now playing at a level, I think, that is fitting for Canadian values. But Pavel, we got in my city 70% of the homeless kids tonight here in Canada. And for your viewers, it's -7 here right now. Okay. It's going to go down to -12 tonight. I've got kids that are on the street. I've got 220 kids that are going to go to the homeless shelter tonight. And those youth, 70% of them identify as LGBTQ2 because their straight parents kicked them out when they come out of the closet. That's not right. We have to change that. In Ottawa, 50% of the homeless kids are LGBTQ2. In Calgary, it's the same amount. So this is an issue across the country. We have seniors that are being recloseted when they go to find a senior's home because the older seniors don't want to know about LGBTQ issues. And so we've got intersections of faith, of prejudice that have to be broken down and brought together. And at the same time, we have faith-based organizations that are embracing the LGBTQ2 community and saying, you're welcome here. Come and be part of our seniors' home. Look, we have issues of discrimination and racism and the intersectionality of people who are queer, who are visible minority, a person of color, who are women, maybe who have a disability. Like, those intersectionalities we haven't mastered here in Canada. And so the federal government needs to do more work with the provinces to stamp out racism, homophobia, biphobia. And I can say that after the 2019 election, I had been working on it, and there is now a minister and a ministry responsible for diversity and inclusion and youth. And Minister Bartosz Chagger is responsible for that ministry. And the LGBTQ2 secretariat that I led, which was in the Privy Council office, you can think about that as like the cabinet secretariat, that has now been moved over to the Ministry of Canadian Heritage, where Minister Chagger's ministry resides. And so now there's a bigger team, and there's a full minister responsible for this issue at cabinet. But internationally, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, François-Philippe Champagne, and the Minister of International Development, Corinna Gould, both have responsibilities to advance LGBTQI issues around the world. And here's the other point. The Prime Minister and all the ministers have made it very clear that this is a government-wide, whole-of-government initiative to improve the lives of LGBTQ2 Canadians and LGBTI people around the world. And so for that, we have reasons to be hopeful, and we continue to learn from our colleagues around the world. And if any NGOs are watching, and leaders, and there's NGOs that have access to a Canadian mission or a Canadian embassy, we have Canadian leadership funds that allow the local embassy to fund LGBTI projects. And so if you haven't talked to one of the officials at the Canadian embassy near you, please do, because we want to make sure that none of those funds goes unused simply because nobody's asked for the funding.
I mean, I'm impressed. I'm not only impressed about the work we are doing for the Global Equality Caucus. I think it's super important, and we can't wait for the digital event in January. But actually, I'm really thankful that we could also talk a little bit about the situation in Canada. And I think this is important that East meets West not only focus on the really very East, on our region, but also gives a bit of view what's happening in the world. Thank you for this one. I have one more question, sure. Randy. As long as I know you, you've been always smiling. You've been always like almost hyper energy. Where is your source of energy? Where do you go for this recharging of batteries? Maybe this will be a little tip for broad audience who is listening to us.
It's a deep character flaw, Pavel. I have no idea. It has always been such. I mean, maybe it's a good thing. Maybe I was probably an ADHD kid and there was no Ritalin available and they just let me go and do things. And it just became part of my character. But look, I'm a big fan of life. I've always been a builder. I want to see things get better. And even if I have a bad day, the next morning when I get up, it's a reset. There's always something to do. There's always a new challenge. Let's be clear. I have a very healthy dose of sugar and a very healthy dose of caffeine in my diet. Maybe it's unhealthy. I don't know. But look, I did the Ironman in 2007 to prove that I could be an athlete. And I did it in my sister's memory. And so I'm not as fit as I was in 2007. But keeping the mind fit, keeping the body fit, making sure that my family is healthy, that my friends are healthy. I mean, particularly in this time of COVID, and depending where you are in the world, the cases are surging, and it looks like it's going to be a dark winter. But we have to keep people close, and we have to admit when we're having a rough day or a bad day, but we also have to, you know, stay close. And we have to, even this time of Zoom, and maybe it's making us closer than we otherwise would be, Pavel, because, you know, the flight to get over there and the hotels and everything, maybe you go, maybe you don't. But now I can just click a button and I see you. And it allows us in some ways to be closer than ever before. And it makes us hopeful for the time when we can come back together. So in my case, it's family, it's friends, a little bit of chocolate, the right amount of caffeine, a good healthy diet, and the right amount of exercise. And knowing that by working with you, we can make a difference in the world, that's what keeps the energy levels high.
Wow. Thank you, Randy. Thank you. Although, to be honest, I'm not sure if I'm super happy at the moment because you reminded me of Iron Man. This is still on my bucket list.
You must do it. Just go.
I almost forgot about it. I can do cycling easily. I can do miles and miles and miles. I can do running.
Sure.
But I cannot swim. Okay. I can't swim.
Look, you are already more ready than I was. I'm going to tell you the story. My sister had died 10 years earlier from an issue that medical science still can't understand. She was 20 years old at her desk. She collapsed out of her desk. And I was devastated. I was 27. She was 20. Our family almost fell apart because she was the light of our eyes, beautiful, flowing red hair and a temper to match. And 10 years later, I decided to do the Ironman, having gone to Penticton in British Columbia to watch some friends do it. By the end of it, I thought I could honor my sister by calling it Swim Bike Run for Lisa and raising a bunch of money that she would have supported for charities she would have supported. But here's the kicker, my friend. I had only ever done a half marathon. I couldn't swim and I didn't have a bike. And I paid my $700, came back to Edmonton, got a membership to the pool, started swimming, found a multi-sport team, went and bought a bike a month later. But the key was I had a plan for a year. I found a team that would support me. And anytime I didn't know something, I would go and ask. And I went, it was interesting because I have a small cabin outside of Edmonton, and the person who has the cabin next to me used to be a swimming instructor. And he saw me struggling in the water and he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I don't know how to breathe. I don't know how to do bilateral breathing." He said, "Come here." And he put me in the water. He bent me over and he made me do the bilateral breathing. He said, "Now go 100 meters and practice and come back 100 meters and practice." In 10 minutes, I unlocked a secret that I didn't have for 36 years before that. And then I went and swam for a kilometer and came back because I could breathe. And so surround yourself with experts, surround yourself with people who want to see you succeed. And you're going to have some ups and downs, but I can tell you, just getting in the water on Ironman day is the best feeling in the world. Whether you finish or not, you've made it to the finishing line. And then when I finished in 15 hours, 15 minutes, and my mom and dad came across the finish line with me, I will be 89 years old in my rocking chair and remember that day. So you owe it to yourself to do it. You have more assets than I did. I can't wait to congratulate you when you cross the finish line.
Thank you. Thank you, Randy. And it was a great pleasure talking to you today. And also, thank you for being part of the East Meets West Network. Really love talking to you.
It's our pleasure. My pleasure. Good luck. And I can't wait to see you all again.
Bye-bye.